Elad Voren. These are the words. So why doesn't the book of Deuteronomy begin simply by Yedaber Moshe? Moshe spoke, as, you know, the way that most chapters in the Torah begin. It's the Medrash, we learn in the Medrash. The reason the Torah is given is so that we don't waste our time, so that the Jewish people are given something, so that their words shouldn't be dvorim betelim, empty words, but that they should be words that are full of substance. And this is the Torah. So that would explain why the Torah begins this book saying Eile Hadvarim, these are the words. What words? The words about which the Gemara says that we were given the Torah in order for us to have words. But why is it so important? Is it because we have something against empty words? I mean, what's so wrong about just words that we're afraid that if we don't have a Torah, we'll just have Dvorim Betelim. So, the Ishbitza says, Zeh Pirish, this is the meaning of the Posuk, Ha'umnam Ileim Tzedek Tadabrun, have you become, Ha'umnam Ileim, have you become dumb? Tzedek Tadabrun, speak righteousness, speak justice. There's two sides. There's, on the one side, there's the words that mean nothing, and on the other side, there's the words that are laden with meaning. With every sense and every faculty that the human being was endowed, God endowed also a mitzvah so that we can use that faculty in the service of God. And humans are created with the power of speech. And so the human is given divrei Torah, words of Torah. So the problem isn't that we speak and that sometimes our words don't really have tremendous meaning or tremendous value or weight, but that the world that God created has in it ways of worshipping. Eile hadvarim, these are the words, says Moshe Rabbeinu. If you want to know how to worship God with words, well, these are them. This is the Torah. You know, one of the things about Chassidus and the philosophy of Chassidus, particularly the late, the 19th century Chassidus of Poland, which is what we are learning here, the Chassidus of Ishbitz, which comes from Pshischa, which was different. According to the Polish Chassidim, this is the culmination of Chassidus. Of course, every Chassidus thinks that it's got the key. Okay. But what was different about the Chassidus of Pshischa is that it sees Torah and Tefillah as the same, one and the same. That learning and praying, that learning Torah and worshipping are the same thing. It's not that you have to learn Torah in order to prepare yourself to daven, but learning is davening. Because what is davening? Davening is learning. Right, davening is not a petitionary prayer. It's a kind of davening, but that's not the worship of God. If a person is in a petitionary prayer, they're still not fully 100% in the worship of God. When a person is experiencing their prayer as learning, And how do you know that you're experiencing your worship as a learning is when you experience your learning as worship. That's the meaning of the Torah of the Baal Shem Tov according to Pshisra. So Moshe Rabbeinu begins to speak and he says, Eila hadvorim asher dibe Moshe al kol Yisrael. These are the words that Moshe spoke to all of Israel, Be'eva HaYarden, on the other side of the river Jordan, Bamidbar in the wilderness, Bo'arovo in the plain, Mul Suf, opposite Suf, Bein Poron, between Poron, Ubein Teufel Velovon, and Teufel Velovon, Vechatzeros, Vedizohov. So there's a whole list of names. And in fact, in the Talmud, in the Gemara, it says, Omer Rabbi Yochanan says, I went through the whole of the Bible and I didn't find in one place a mention of these Teufel and Lovon. Right? And yet here we're given like these coordinates. Right? So the Gemara says, well, really, Moshe Rabbeinu is telling us here all the things that we did wrong, but he doesn't want to shame us at the beginning of this book of Deuteronomy, and so it comes across as, you know, a list of place names, but we need to look at them, right? Be'eva hayarden bamidbo. They weren't in the wilderness, right? They were on the east bank of the river Jordan. That's not the wilderness. But in much Rabbeinu was reminding us of all the sins that we did in the wilderness. Ba'arovo, on the plain. And it's because of the plain, because that's where we worshipped Baal Peor. Mul Suf, opposite the Suf. Well, we weren't anywhere near the Yam Suf, the Red Sea, right? But he was reminding us of how, when we stood there at the Red Sea, how we challenged God and said, you know, what's the matter? Did God bring us out here to kill us in the wilderness by the sea? And so on, Bein Poron, Bein Teufel Velovon, each of these things, each of these place names refers to a sin, till finally Dizahav refers to the sin of the worshipping the golden calf. Dizahav means plenty gold, which is what led us to the worship of the golden calf. So the Ishbitzer says, so inyan mashmechane es chato Yisrael al shem es hamekoymites. Why did Moshe choose to use the place names? In fact, they're not really place names, right? But he could have said, you know, and Moshe spoke to us after Shabbos on a Tuesday in the morning, before noon, and so on. You know, the pasuk could have had a different way of doing the same hinting, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. It could have been done with times, right? At the end of the year and the beginning of the summer and so on. It could have use those kind of hints. Why does it use locations rather than times? Remez b'zeh. So the Ishbitzer says an amazing thing. Shelo yachshiv v'odom. A person shouldn't think kichetamu neged b'chirosam, that the reason Moshe Rabbeinu is mentioning their sins here is because Moshe Rabbeinu wants to say, oy chevre, what bad choices you made. You had choice. You could have turned away from sin. You could have chosen better ways to live, right? So that's why, according to the Ishbitzer, Moshe Rabbeinu is Dafka chooses. He goes out of his way to choose names of places to tell us. In that place where we were, we had to do what we did. The meaning of place is where you are, and that place who you are, and what you're capable of, and what's expected of you, and what can be predicted. And the Ishbitzer is saying is that Moshe Rabbeinu is telling us for all generations, don't think that that generation who came out of Egypt and stood at Mount Sinai and said Nasan Vinishman and went through all the trials that they went through, don't think that they kept on coming up short and they kept on making bad choices. But in fact, the choices that they made are very much connected to the places that they were in. And the places that they were in meant that they could only make that choice, which, when we look at it again, you know, this is pure Ishbitzer Torah, right? The Indian, the Ishbitzer says again and again, you cannot take free will as a huge, big, broad brush like a roller with paint on it and just paint over your life, your history, and the history of a whole nation and say, well, you know, they made bad choices. I made bad choices. Free will is not a broad brush that you can just paint over the cracks in the narrative with. There's a narrative. And part of the narrative is not just about where you are, who you are, but also the forces that are at work in your life. You know? And in a way, you know, God is telling us that come the end of the life, right, when there's a cheshbon and there's some kind of an account that has to be given, you know, that is also taken into account, you know. The fact that we were in a certain place and that we acted in a certain way is fairly predictable, and that's also part of the narrative. The next pasuk says, Achad osen yoim mechoyrev. We were 11 days from Choyrev. So, Kodesh Barnea, which is on the border of the land of Israel, is 11 days walk from Mount Sinai. And you know what? We walked it in 3 days. Because it was on the 20th of Iyar, in the second year, that we walked away from Sinai after we had, you know, worshipped the calf, and Moshe had gone back up, and he'd come back down on Yom Kippur, and he brought down the second commandments, and then we immediately started to build the tabernacle, the Mishkan, and then we finished the Mishkan at the end of the year, and we began to erect the tabernacle at the beginning of Nisan, and then Nodav and Aviu died on the 8th day, and then came Pesach of that year, and then came Pesach Sheni, and it was a week after Pesach Sheni that we walked away from Sinai. And it says on the 29th of Sivan that we sent the Meraglim from Kodesh Barnea. So, Rashi brings a whole cheshbon that we spent 30 days in Kiryas Atav, and this and this, and 7 days we waited for Miriam. So, we know that it took us 3 days. So there was a miraculous kvitzas aderech, like a shrinking of the road. And this 11-day journey, we walked in three. And Moshe Rabbeinu, according to Rashi, Moshe Rabbeinu is saying to us, look, God wanted to get you into the land so fast, and what did you do, right? You blew it, right? The Ishbitzer says there's something else Moshe is saying. When Moshe says it was 11 days walk, why does Moshe need to say that? It's enough to say 3 days. I mean, if we walked it in 3 days, it can be done. All right, so it was miraculous, but it can be done. Why is Moshe Rabbeinu insist on pointing it out? Receiving the Torah, accepting the Torah, saying yes, it was a fantastic spiritual moment in the history of the world. And we felt like never again were we going to experience such heights, such closeness to God, right? And we really thought we were there. When we said, Nasa v'nishma, we will do, and we will listen, we really felt it. We meant it, right? When we walked away from there, we thought we had achieved it. But the Ishbitzer says, we hadn't. Our hearts were not yet that pure. In their minds, we understood that that's the right thing to do. To go, to follow, to be drawn to the will of God. But in our hearts, you see, so many times, so often in life, we make decisions, right? Or we make affirmations. We take on. We say, yes, this is what I'm going to do. But then we don't do it. Why? Because knowing in your mind that something is the right thing to do and making a decision to do it is still not the same as having it in your heart. Because until the heart comes with, it's not all. You're not whole. So the Ishbitzer says, what was it that was going to make the Jewish people whole? And that was Bias HaOretz, coming into the land. Oz Nizdak Yechlibom. You know, this little piece of land there that they're fighting around. Fighting and fighting. It's hard to believe, you know, Yerushalayim, that this is... Shlomo used to say, you know, in the world of war, Berlin is the capital. The world of commerce, New York is the capital. The world of art, Paris is the capital. What is Yerushalayim? An unbedeutete Stadt. It's like an unimportant place. What is it? No meaning. Ha, but in the world of peace, in the world of Shabbos, then Yerushalayim is the capital city. So it depends on the zeitgeist of the world, right? Where is the world, right? The world is at war, Yerushalayim doesn't even come into it. In the world of peace, Yerushalayim is the heart. The world of Shabbos, Yerushalayim is the heart of the heart. So we needed to come into the land in order for our hearts to become really drawn to following God. In our minds we made that decision to follow God, but in our heart we were still fighting. And this is what Moshe Rabbeinu meant when he said to them, Achal oso yoim echoyev, you really were 11 days from Choyrev. Hayru kashayisim b'choyrev v'kibaltem ha-toyre, hoyo b'datchem, when you were at Sinai and you accepted the Torah, you thought, kikvan esdakech libchem, that your hearts are all purified and clean and all whitewashed and it's all ready to go. And you thought, ha-ha, the proof of it is that we did this journey that should have taken 11 days, we did it in 3. Ubamis ain't a cane, but the truth isn't so. There is an 11-day journey which you didn't make. And you didn't acquire those words of Torah that would be fixed into your heart. You know, I'm not a big mumcha in the 11 days, but you know, I know something about the 12-step program, and they keep on saying to newcomers, you know, it's a 12-step program because you can't take the elevator. There is no elevator. There's steps, and you take the first one, and then you take the second one, and then you take the third one. And there's a joke about people who go 13th stepping, which is they take the first step, number 1, and the last step, number 12, and they run with it, and they end up with 13, which means they're out of the program. Because the way the program is set up, there are 12, you have to take them one after the other. And here, Moshe Rabbeinu was saying the same thing. You know, you took a 3-day journey, which is all very nice, but it's not a 3-day journey, it's an 11-day journey. And you didn't take all the steps. Rak achar ha'arba'im shana, it was only after 40 years, al yidei ha'michsholos v'hanisyonos, al yidei ze nizdakech libchem. You know, because you took it in 3 days, you ended up spending another 40 years. So those 8 days that you didn't travel from Sinai to Kodesh Barnea, those 8 days ended up costing you 40 years. Why? She'ein odam oimed al divrei Torah el imkein nechshal b'hem. And this is a Gemara. A person can never get to the depth of Divrei Torah, a person can never really get it, understand it, a person can never really own it, unless you stumbled. Once you broke the law, and you go through the process of understanding what happened to you and how you came to it and then how you're going to fix it and what you're going to do in the future to prevent yourself breaking the... There, now you have it. Ein odam oimed al divrei Torah. A person doesn't stand on the words of the Torah. Ela im kein nechshel behem, only if he stumbles. You don't stand until you stumble. Val zeh omer David ha-melech ol v'shalom. And this is what King David meant when he said, "Su'u l'chav l'chem mashkimei kum." In vain you strive, you early risers. Ma'achrei sheves, who stay up late, oichlei lechem atzavim, eating the bread of anxiety. Kein yiten lididoi sheno, so God gives to those whom he loves sleep. Right? So there are people who sit up all night worrying, right? And then they get up very early in the morning, and the bread that they eat, you know, is like gives them indigestion, right? Because they've got so much anxiety. Right? And then you have people who completely relaxed, not afraid of anything, and they go to sleep without worrying about what's happening in the morning, and they get up and they don't have indigestion, they don't have heartburn, and their life is successful. What is it? Yeah. So the Ishbitz says what David HaMelech is saying, Ki koidim shelev odam nizdakech, before a person's heart is pure, tzorich leyegia ve'etzev, so he needs to worry, he needs to work hard, he needs all those things, the indigestion that comes with the anxiety, that comes with the worry, that comes with the whole thing, is like, how am I going to get this done? Shikayim rutzen Hashem zbarach, because a person wants to fulfill the will of God. You know? And what does King David say? Shavlach, shavlachem, it's worthless, it's useless, it's not going to work, because that's not how it works. Ach ach shenik v'divatoy b'liboy, because if the Torah is not in your heart, all the anxiety and worrying is for nothing. Because once the Torah is in your heart, as mashpia la HaKadosh Baruch Hu divrei Torah af b'li yegia, then the Torah comes even without the hard work. Ba'af be'ez sheina, even when a person's asleep. Ve'en tzurech liyages atzmi kokech, a person doesn't have to wear himself to the bone so much. So what does everything depend on? It doesn't depend on the decision. It doesn't depend on the commitment. It depends on the heart. Right? So much so, the Ishbitz is saying, that even though we stood at Sinai and went through the whole thing, that, you know, the angels came down from heaven and said, Migila, Rasulullah, who told these guys this secret about saying, Nasa Venishma, we will do, we will listen, what an amazing thing. Yeah, it was very amazing. But it was like a New Year's resolution, right? How many of us have made New Year's resolutions that didn't really pan out, right? I've made New Year's resolutions that I didn't even last the day, right? I mean, but I was sure when I made the resolution, it was like final. It was gonna happen. It was gonna be. It was as good as done. Because I said so, right? So how come it didn't work? Because it wasn't in my heart. Because, you know something? Once it's in my heart, it's not so much work. How do I get it in my heart? So the Ishbitz says, it takes 40 years, you know? The steps take as long as they take. One of the things that it takes is, it takes making mistakes. So Moshe Rabbeinu continues and he says, Vo'imar aleichem, and I said to you, Sahi, at that time, Leimo is saying, Lo yuchal levadi se'eseschem. I can't carry you alone. You know, what did Moshe Rabbeinu mean when he said, Vo'imar aleichem bo'esahi leimo? And I said to you at that time, saying. But the word lemur doesn't really mean saying. It means to repeat, right? To say. Azoi zu sagen. To say like this. You know, the verse would have been quite complete if Moshe Rabbeinu, if the text is like this. Vo'omer aleichem ba'esahi, and I said to you at that time, le'uchal levadi se'esachem, I can't carry you alone. There's a word lemoir in there, to say, which is, on the surface, it's superfluous. Vo'omer aleichem ba'esahi lemoir, and I said to you at that time, saying, and then, what did I tell you? Havu lochem anoshim chachomim, bring people chachomim, or wise, unavoinim, with understanding, v'yiduim l'shivteichem, well known, v'asimim b'roshechem, and I will put them over you. Right? I can't carry you alone, da 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 da, so send me people who are fit to lead, and I will appoint them as leaders. Kashahoyu kroivim likonis le'eretz Yisrael. As they got close to the land of Israel, Hirgish Moshe Rabbeinu, he knew and he felt, he could sense, ki rotzen Hashem Yisborach Hu, that God's will is shalidei Yehoshua yichnesu le'eretz, that Joshua bring the Jewish people into the land. And you know something? The only way we can explain what happened is in terms of narrative. The narrative dictated that Joshua was going to bring the people into the land, that Moshe wasn't, and it didn't really matter what Moshe was going to do. It didn't matter how much teshuvah he was going to do or how much begging he was going to do. He wasn't going to succeed in changing the narrative, right? But of course, Moshe never gave up until God said to him, Rav Loch, enough, Al Tosef, don't speak to me anymore about this, right? Which is what we'll find in next week's Seder. But Moshe prayed and prayed and prayed. So, as we draw close to come to the land of Israel, Moshe Rabbeinu realizes his time is running out and Yehoshua is going to take over and he's not going to make it. He's not going to change the decree. For who Hoya writes, what did Moshe Rabbeinu want? She Yisparalu Yisrael Hashem. He wanted us to pray for him. That we don't want another Rebbe, we don't want another leader, we don't want another pastor, we want Moshe Rabbeinu. He wanted us to make a scene there, like we made scenes over the meat and over the water and over the this and over the that. We were the queen of scenes, right? We could make a scene. And how come when Moshe Rabbeinu is about to die, nobody thinks to sit down wailing and crying and saying, we don't want Moshe Rabbeinu to die. So that's the meaning of the word lemur here. V'zeh sh'ramaz b'mamoroi, and this is what Moshe Rabbeinu meant when he says, le'uchal vadi, says him, I can't do this alone to carry you. What couldn't he do alone? He couldn't pray alone. He couldn't succeed. Vo'oimar aleichem bo'es hahi lemoy, and I said to you at that time to say, saying, Le'uchal levadi se'eses, and I can't carry you alone. Moshe Rabbeinu was hinting to us, Chevra, listen to me. I told you, saying, listen. Shemotzinu, af shemotzinu she'achakach bikash me'ashem shu'yachnisim, even though we find that later Moshe Rabbeinu went back to praying and asking God, please let me go into the land. Why does Moshe Rabbeinu keep on telling us about how he prays to God? And because he wants us, you know, he keeps on giving us hints and we keep on missing the point, you know. He's trying to hint to us that, hey, Chevra, you know, do something. I need you to pray for me so that I can get out of here. This is the ninth verse from the beginning of the chapter. And as we've learned in Ishbitz many times, this is his insight into the whole Torah. And maybe there's a There's a PhD thesis here for somebody who wants to do a little work on Ishbit, and that's to go through the ninth posuk of every Sedra and see what it is that's special about it, what is it that's subtextual. But that's the Ishbit saying, this is what's hidden in this ninth posuk here. The commission of Ubin Parshas Balak, as is explained in Parshas Balak, there also it was the ninth posuk. The Himla Yevino, but the Yidden didn't understand. V'amru, and what did they say when Moshe Rabbeinu said, come, send me people who are Chachamim, Nevoinim, Yodim, Yiduim, Neshivtechem. What did the Yidden say? They said, Toiv Hadavar. Oh, very good. Yeah, very good. So, the Gemara says, Moshe Rabbeinu originally, when he commanded us to bring him people who were potentially leaders, right? He said, bring me Chachamim, which is Chachma, right? Nevoinim, which is Bina. Viduim Nishivtechem, which is Das, right? Chabad, Chachma, Bina, Das, right? He said, send me people who really are wise and understanding and knowledgeable. Afterwards, this is a Gemara. The Gemara says, V'ekach me'itchem, and I took from among you, Anoshim, men, Chachomim, wise, Viduim, and well-known. This is verse 15. Chachomim, Viduim. But Nevoinim, the Bina, that doesn't say Moshe Rabbeinu took, right? He took men who are Chachomim, Viduim, but not Nevoinim. The Gemara says, because he couldn't find any. The reason that it doesn't say, and I took men who were Chachamim Nevoinim Yiduim, is because he couldn't find Nevoinim. He couldn't find people with Bina. So the Ishbitzer says, why? What does it mean? It's because, you know, we were so smart, right? Everybody was like so clever and thing, but we didn't understand basics that Moshe Rabbeinu was like hinting to us with waving flags of every color, giving us verbal hints and all kinds of clues and cues, and we didn't get it. There wasn't in the whole Klal Yisrael, among 600,000 men, there wasn't one person who had enough understanding to get what Moshe Rabbeinu was saying. Ki be'im hevantim es kavanosi. Moshe Rabbeinu says, if you had only understood what I was saying, v'ispalaltem, and you had prayed for me, ulay hayisim ma'ilim b'tfiloschem, maybe you could have succeeded where I couldn't succeed. You know, again, it's the force of the narrative, right? The Gemara says that when Moshe Rabbeinu was going up the mountain already, Nadav and Avihu was saying, Moshe is going to die and Yahushua is going to take us into the land. You know, I guess the narrative it's already so deep, such a deep channel, you know, it's such a deep groove. The story has such a deep groove that you can't like undo the story or remake the story. You know, if it's a happy ever after story, that's how it ends. And if it's a tragic comedy, that's how it ends, and so on. But can you imagine Moshe Rabbeinu trying to get one person to get the hint, and nobody, and like, we're all so stupid, right? The only way you can explain it is that God is making us so stupid. Because he doesn't want us to get the hint. Because Moshe Rabbeinu, he doesn't go into the land. And that's all there is. In fact, Moshe Rabbeinu, at the end of his life, he says, oh, now I understand what you were telling me at the burning bush when you said, you will see what I will do to Egypt. And Moshe says, ah, so already back then, 40 years ago, you were telling me really that you're not going to let me in the land, right? You're gonna let me see what you do to Egypt, but you're not going to let me see what you do to all the kings of Canaan, huh? And God says, yeah, that's true. So Moshe says, well, in that case, you know, it's like a man on his way home, right, he goes into the scribe, and he has the scribe write out a divorce. And he comes home, and his wife puts down a plate of soup in front of him, and the soup is not hot. So he says, you know what, I'm fed up with your cooking here, take a divorce. You're divorced. And she says to him, that was convenient, wasn't it? You just happen to have a divorce in your pocket? And it's my cooking that triggered it? I don't think so. This is a setup, right? And Moshe Rabbeinu said to God, right, you'd already decided I'm not going into the land right before I met you at the burning bush, right? God says, yeah. So all this stuff about hitting the rock and it's like, this is all just excuses, right? God says, yeah, yeah. That's the truth. It's just an excuse. Noiru alilu. So it's all a conspiracy, right? Why? That God says that you can't ask, right? Hashem Elokeichem hir ba'eschem, God, your Lord, has multiplied you. And behold, today you are many as the stars. So the Midrash says, Moshe says to God, how come? Why didn't you say to the Jewish people, look, you were once so few, and now you're like the sun and the moon, right? Which are so obvious, like they're big, right? Why like the stars, which are so distant and so minuscule and so powerless, basically, right? So God says to Moshe, the sun and the moon are going to have all kinds of shame in the world to come. And the moon will blush, and the sun will be ashamed. But the stars will never have to be ashamed. Minayin, how do you know? Because it says, Ki bekerev Yisrael ani, v'ani Hashem Elokeichem ein oit. Because the heart of the Jewish people am I, and I'm your God, and there is no other. So what's the connection between this and this? When you do something and that act shines like the sun and the moon, that refers to those acts that we do of our own free will, of our own choice, of our own volition. These are things that we do because, you know, that of who we are, right? And so we do acts that shine like the sun and the moon. But the truth is, in the big picture, and this is very interesting that the Ishbitzer can see something that Jews haven't really been able to see. In the big picture, what's the sun and the moon, right? It's a little yellow star in a really unfashionable eastern arm of the galaxy, right? What is the solar system? Sigunish mitnisht. Once you look at the universe, you can't even find the sun inside that little disk they call the galaxy, right? I mean, what is it? So when we talk about starlight, we're talking about those acts that we do because we are moved by God. Because that's God is inside us, right? And that's the connection. Now we can understand the Medrash. The Medrash says, and how do we know that the stars are not going to be ashamed? Because it says, Ki bekerev Yisrael ani, because I am inside the Jewish people. V'ani Hashem lekechem ein oit, and I am God, the Lord, and there is no other, right? Because in that place where God is enlightening us, and there where we are moving and acting and doing things in the light of God's light, this is going to last forever. And you know something? If we look at the universe, the sun and the moon are really totally like, they could disappear and the whole solar system could disappear and there wouldn't even be a tremor. what really matters in the universe are the stars, right? So we sit here on Earth and the stars don't seem to be very important, right? We don't realize that the inertial mass that we have, you know, that all the laws of physics depend not on what's happening here, but what's happening in the universe out there. How many stars are there, right? The laws of gravity, that everything that you and I, we are made up of, is not dependent on the sun and the moon, but on all those stars. They tell us how much we weigh. They tell us, you know, what's the specific gravity of a hydrogen atom. Doesn't depend on the sun and the moon, right? But it depends on the gravity that is the entire universe, right? Which is the stars, right? And that's so big, so vast, that we can't even feel that inside ourselves because we are part of it. We're stardust. Finally, the Ishbitzer mentions that at the end of the parasha, it talks about Og Melech HaBashan, Og, who was the king of Bashan, and how he was this great giant, and his bed, he was so big that his bed is a museum piece, right, for everybody to come and look. The Arsoya is Barzel. His bed is this huge iron bed. Interesting that the Gemara, the Torah already, the five books of Moshe, talking about Barzel iron, which there in the Bashan, in the north eastern sector, which is today like Syria, which is, people were already smelting metal back in the late Bronze Age, right? So he had a big bed. Halahu b'rabas b'nei amoin, Moshe Rabbeinu nisyar ma'oik. Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid of oik. Because oik had the bris mila, which was given to him by Avraham. Because Oig Melech HaBashan, Oig the king of Bashan, was in fact Eliezer the servant of Avraham. And Avraham had circumcised everybody in his household, and so Eliezer was circumcised by Avraham. And Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid because that holy sign that was in the flesh of Og would make him invincible and more powerful than Moshe Rabbeinu. And Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid lest God is with Oig, and so therefore Oig is not somebody that can be fought. And this is why the Torah goes to the trouble of telling us the dimensions of the bed, which are 9 cubits long and 4 cubits wide. Ki tes v'dalet, the letter tes, which is 9, and the letter dalet, which is 4, heim oisis akadumois l'shem yud hei. The tes comes before the yud, and the dalet comes before the hei. And whatever comes before is gevura. And so Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid that Oig has the 9 and the 4, and he, Moshe, only has the 10 and the 5. And that the 9 and the 4 are the power from which the 10 and the 5 come. Because from the Yud-Hei, everything flows, right? Because the second two letters of the Vav-Hei, Himrak Tfisus Ho'odim Kitu, they are how we receive, but the flow comes from the Yud-Hei. The Vav-Hei is the other end, right? The receiving end. This is what Moshe Rabbeinu was afraid of. Perhaps Oig is the one with the Yud-Hei. Perhaps he's the one with the Yud-Hei so deep that it's like 9-4 instead of 10-5. Maybe it's like the source of Yud-Hei is inside Oig. So God shows him that. Don't worry, it's not so. Even if he looks like a very holy, righteous, special person, he's not on the inside, he's not, it's just the outside. And that's why the Torah tells us His bed can be found in Rabat, in Ammon. Ki Ammonu klipas tava v'niyuf, because the Ammonites, their god was a god of lust. They worshipped sexuality as a god. Ukamam azoyikosh de pogim bahahi oispris, that the reason that Eliezer Oig was not to be feared because he had damaged his own bris by his behavior. This we see God says to Moshe, Hayom ochel teis pachtecho aloamim ashetachas kol ha-shamayim. Today I'm going to put fear of you on the nations that are underneath all the heavens. So the Eishbitzer says, it should have said all the nations under the heavens. Why does it say the nations under all the heavens? Kishamayim nikra gvan al nire lemara enayim nekoyach v'siyatu me'ashem izbar. Because blue, you know, in Jewish, as an Jewish icon, blue refers to that color of God saving us, the Techeles, the blue wall, the sea, the brick of sapphire that is underneath the throne of glory, and so on. Blue is the symbol of God on earth, right? So, Ha'elei Hashem Yisbarach, so God says to Moshe, Ki b'toich ha'um is im b'zeh shum mamash. None of the nations are blue. They're not connected to the blue. That's why it doesn't say all the nations who are beneath heaven, but it says the nations who are beneath all the heaven. Moshe is being told in a hint, all the colors that look so good there among the Gentiles, among the nations, it's just goonish, it's nothing. You know, I spent a year in Istanbul, you know, and I saw such frum Muslims. I tell you, it was scary. It was scary. I'm thinking to myself, frum? These guys are so frum. These guys are so frum. And the Ishbitzer says, no, they're not. Don't worry.